There was once a small community in Litten, Lithuania, that sent a delegation to Mezhebish, where the Baal Shem Tov resided, with the request that the holy Baal Shem Tov send them one of his Talmidim, one of his disciples, that he serve as the Rav, as the rabbi of the community. They told the Baal Shem Tov that they will take good care of him, they will pay him, respect him, honor him, and Baal Shem Tov agreed to their request, and he chose one of his Talmidim who was indeed received warmly by the whole Kehillah, by the whole community. This Talmud of the Baal Shem, this disciple, devoted himself immediately to the community, and among the things that he did was to see that all the local tzedakas, all the various community funds for the charity, that there be money in these funds so that the lechem le'avyonim, that the bread for the poor, the malbish arumim, the clothing, those who didn't have clothing, the healing the sick, the lefecholim, the rachnos, all these various charities, hospitality, all these things that were taken care of by the local community, in a small community, that there should be money for all these various charities. In that little town, there lived a certain Talmud Chacham, a Torah scholar, who came from a very illustrious family, and who spent his whole time Limud HaTorah, strictly devoting himself to the Torah, the study of Torah. He earned a living, as it were, because he was supported by a certain amount of money which the local balabatim, the local householders, gave him every week. And this was done by having one of these balabatim go among all the other members of the community who were interested and who were capable of helping this Talmud Chacham, and they would give their donations towards supporting this Ben Tovim, this man of good standing and this scholar. The new rabbi, however, the Rav, was not happy with this arrangement, because he felt it worked to the detriment and to the disadvantage of the other tzedakas, for the other communal charities. For when the people were asked to give to the Lechem Levyonim, the Malbush Arum Society, when they were asked to give to the various other charities, they would say that we already have our project, we're helping support this Talmud Chacham, and this is something which requires an amount of money from us, which precludes our giving to other things. And so the Rav told these people that it would be better to give a little less to an individual, and Tzarchei Rabim, the needs of the many, that takes precedent. The result of the Rav's words was that the contributions towards this Talmud Chacham began to become less and less, and finally it came to the point that the fellow who used to go around collecting the money, then he saw that people were really hardly giving anything. He decided that it's really hardly worthwhile to continue going around and spending the time and asking everybody for money, when every time they would tell him, sorry, we've got to give now to the other charities, we cannot give to this one, the rabbi said, and came to a point where he simply stopped going. The Talmud Chacham's wife came to visit him in the Beis HaMedrash, in the study hall, on Thursday, as it was her custom, to ask him for the money so to buy the family's needs for Shabbos. And he had to answer that this week, unfortunately, he had nothing to give her because the man had stopped collecting and nobody gave him any money. The wife left home empty-handed. She left for the house without anything. And the Talmud Chacham, the scholar, was so distressed that he wept. And he wept quite bitterly at his lot. His demois, his tears, had an effect in Shemayim, had an effect in heaven. And they acted as a prosecution, as it were, on the Rav, who, because of him, here this family was not able to have a livelihood. And in fact, there was another thing that had been brought against the Rav in the Bezne Shalmaila, the heavenly court, only a few days before that. And that was that two Balei Dinim, two litigants in the Rav's town, came before him in a case where one person was Masig Vul, he trespassed to the rights of the other, where he released something from business from the local parts, local squire. And if the Rav would have protested energetically, if he would have made a vayitzaku, if he would have raised a hue and cry against this evil behavior, the person who was guilty of this hasogas gvul would have obeyed the Rav's ruling and backed down. But the Rav did not act as vociferously as he should have. And finding the Rav guilty on both these charges, the Bezen Shalmaila, the heavenly court, ruled that both of these charges come together, that they be cumulative, and because he was a fine and upstanding individual, and Tzadikim HaKadosh Baruch Hu Medaktik Aleim Kechut HaSayra, that the truly righteous individuals, God reckons with them even for a hairbreadth of misdeed, and for a person of his station, his standing, it was felt that he had sinned grievously, and was decided that he may hand it over, Rahman al-Islam, may God protect us, to the jurisdiction of the Sultan. The prosecuting angel was called and asked whether he feared the Baal Shem Tov, because this, after all, was a Talmud of the Baal Shem Tov. When he answered that he did, the Bezne Shalmaila said as follows: "We hereby hand over to you the Rav of this shtetl, who is a Talmud of the Baal Shem Tov, and you do as you see fit. Do not fear his Rebbe, the Baal Shem Tov, for the Rav is now being taken out of the Balabatashkeit, out of the jurisdiction of the Baal Shem Tov, and he's entering into your Balabatashkeit. That means we are giving him over to you, that you can do as you will." Here, Satan was filled with glee. He has an opportunity that do not readily arise to him, as such a hush of a person, he can do what he wants. And he hit upon a fate for the Rav, which would be worse even than death. And that was, he would lure the Rav into becoming a mumer, becoming an apostate, and becoming somebody who is ready to change his religion. Something which was truly horrendous. It was always the custom of the Rav that when it came to Shabbos, he would daven shacharis, the morning prayers, privately at home. His house was near the shul. And then when it came to Kriya Sater, to the Torah reading, he would be called to hear the Kriya Sater with the tzibur, the congregation. And he would conclude davening with them Musaf, the additional prayer which is recited on Shabbos. After davening, all the balabatim, all the worshippers of shul would be invited to his house, where they would wish each other good Shabbos, and there would be a kiddush with refreshments, and the l'chaim was recited over mashke, though the Rav himself was not wont to indulge in strong drink, and he had never taken more than the sip himself. However, on the Shabbos, immediately following these two stories, the story where he had acted against the Talmud Chochem and the judgment came about that, where slowly but surely the man was earning less and less until there was nothing. And the story of Hasogas Gavul, where he did not deal strongly enough with the guy who was infringing upon the other person's rights, all of a sudden the Shabbos, the Rav, began strangely to be enticed with a burning desire to convert to Christianity. In fact, he had already wrapped himself in this talus, the Rav, preparing himself for shacharis, for the morning prayers, but as if he was going mad, he threw off the talus, and the vodka which was there for the congregation, for the kiddush, he drank it all down, and still dressed in his big day Shabbos, in his dignified Shabbos garments, he went out of the house and ran with all his strength to the local priest. The house stood at the outskirts of the town. The priest saw the Rav, he respected the Rav, and he asked him with respect, "What can I do for you?" When the Rav told him what had brought him there, that he sought to convert, the priest was speechless. He couldn't believe his ears. But inside, he rejoiced. What a great feather in his cap it would be to land such a prize, a rabbi of the community. And he said to the Rav, "I'm afraid that right now I've got some important guests, and I can't help you right now. But let me show you to a room where you can wait until they have departed. And once they've left, I'll call you and we'll take care of our business, no problem." He called on the servant to show the rabbi to the room where he was to wait, and to provide him there with food, with drink. And there the Rav was there waiting, and with this burning desire in his heart to convert. And the Rav helped himself to the large bottle of vodka that stood on the table. But as mentioned earlier, he was so unused to any type of liquor, and he had drunk a little bit yet at home, that he soon vomited, and he fell asleep on the floor of the room. When he awoke a few hours later, the priest still had those important people there with him, but his desire to convert was even stronger than before. He drank even more, and once again lay drunk on the floor till sundown. Meanwhile, the people in the community visited his home after davening, and there's no Rav. Not finding him there, and being astounded at the fact that he hadn't come to shul for the Torah reading, they asked about him in town, and after making different inquiries, they learned to their great consternation and horror that the Rav had suddenly gone out of his mind and was last seen running like a madman in the direction of the parish priest. Immediately, the community was thrown into turmoil. The women were crying. The men were dumbstruck. All their hearts were frozen in anguish, not able to conceive of what possibly could be happening to the Rav. There is one hour that is less earthbound, that is more spiritual than all other hours of the week. And that is the hour of Riven Deriven, as it is called, desire of desires, the hour of Sudat Shlishis, the third Shabbos meal, the mystical twilight meal at which Shabbos reveals its greatest levels to those who are capable of feeling Kedusha Shabbos, the sanctity of Shabbos. And it was during that hour that the soul of the Baal Shem Tov would soar on high, and from beyond the bounds of vision, he would look at all the places where his Talmidim were scattered to see how they were doing in their spiritual quests. On that Shabbos, when he happened in his spiritual vision to see this Talmud who came to that town in Lithuania, this disciple, he saw that the Talmud was sinking into the morass of evil. And the Baal Shem Tov was totally perplexed. How could such a fine individual fall so strongly and so mightily? What's coming off over here? Baal Shem Tov began to sing B'nei Hecholo, which is a traditional Kabbalistic hymn, which is written by Arizal, Rabbi Yitzchok Luria. And as was his custom, he was singing it, but all of a sudden he stopped unexpectedly when he reached the words, Levatolo Chol Klipin, it is his will to annul all the powers of impurity. The Baal Shem Tov went from Olam to Olam, from level to level, from spiritual world to spiritual world, trying to find an answer and somebody who would tell him what avera or averas, what sins his disciple had possibly committed that he be abandoned to such a horrible fate. Wherever he stopped off in Shemayim in heaven, he asked, and no answer. Until in one tremendous Hechel, in one supernal palace, it was revealed to him that there were these two sins, that of the Talmud Chochem, the scholar and his family, who wasn't getting now any more sustenance, and Hasogas Gevul, the fact that he was not stronger, the rabbi, in seeing to it that the other person not impede his friend's business, that these two sins were the reason for his punishment. Baal Shem Tov came before the Bez Mishal Milo, the high court, the heavenly court, and began to say all the wonderful Maisim Tovim, the noble and selfless deeds that this Rav would always do. And why should it be that because of these two things he should have to fall so deeply? But even this did not suffice to nullify the Gzeira Himulfonai. It was a decree from above. At the last moments, Baal Shem Tov recalled that his Talmud had always been Zohar, had been very punctual in the manner of celebrating Malava Malka, the festive meal which we escort the Shabbos Queen after the Shabbos is over. Maybe this last mitzvah can save him. And the Bez Mishal Milo said that, yes, you're right, if he would do this, it would save him. Providing that his Talmud, the disciple, would this very night fulfill this mitzvah and eat the meal in honor of it being the escorting of the Shabbos Queen after the Shabbos day. With this, the Baal Shem Tov suddenly opened his eyes, came back into this world from his spiritual journey, took a slice of challah over which he had made the hamitzi at the beginning of the Sudah Shlishis, at the beginning of the third Shabbos meal, and one of the 12 loaves, the Yud Beis Challahs, which were always baked in his house in honor of Shabbos, as it was in the Beis HaMikdash, the 12 Challahs of the Lechem Aponim, the showbread. And so it was the custom of the Baal Shem Tov to have 12 loaves baked, and gave them to one of his Hasidim. And he said, take these and go, and Hashem will help you. It was then after Shabbos already, and the shliach, the emissary of the Baal Shem Tov, didn't ask the Rebbe, the Baal Shem, where he was to go, what he was supposed to do with the whole challah from the 12 challahs and the slice of challah from the Baal Shem Tov. So, I might say, rather, if he does that which the Baal Shem Tov tells him to do without asking, he was sure that the Almighty would surely show him where he's supposed to go and show him what he was supposed to do, because all the Baal Shem Tov told him was to go and Hashem would help him, and that was enough. The Baal Shem Tov remained at the table, surrounded by the Chavraya Kadisha, the holy brotherhood of his Hasidim and disciples, and over again repeated the expression Lebatol, called Klipin, annul all the powers of impurity. Nobody there could possibly comprehend the meaning of the Rebbe's conduct, something which was, of course, totally out of the ordinary. But it was apparent that something awesome was happening. Meanwhile, the emissary reached the outskirts of Mezhebish. Darkness had fallen. Progress was slow. And his destination was still unknown. To make things worse, the ground was now strewn with gravel and something which generally was not there. And the shliach understood that there are special obstacles are being put in his path, and it was an assoyan that he'd be able to overcome these obstacles. So he walked right on for 2 miles, ignoring the painful pebbles and gravel. After a short stretch, a smooth road, he felt as if he were mired in quicksand. Again, he had to use all the koichas he possessed, all the power he possessed, and the same thing happened a third time. And when he saw that he keeps on having these obstacles, the Baal Shem Tov's disciple cried out to God and begged him to help him carry out the Rebbe's mitzvah, which he didn't know. And all of a sudden he felt that the road was now smooth, and that within seconds, miles and miles of it were disappearing miraculously. After some time, this disciple saw a lantern shining from a window in the distance. He approached and entered an open door in order to rest a little. But there before him, to his great surprise, on the floor lay a Jew in drunken sleep, his black kapota, his Shabbos garb, soiled by his own vomit. The newcomer asked the watchman outside who this was, and was stupefied to hear that this was none other than the local rabbi who had come to the parish priest in order to bite the rendel, as they say, in order to become an apostate. The Talmud, the disciple, now understood why he was sent. He returned to the room and sat down to rest, and thanked God for giving him the strength to overcome all the obstacles and bringing him to his destination, Bisholim, in peace. This drunk man soon awoke and once again immediately reached out for his bottle. But the messenger of the Baal Shem Tov took his hand in his own and said to him, "My friend, listen, what'll be will be, you know, there's no rush. So you can always get to the bottle, but in the meantime, wash your hands, and later you can drink as much as you like." The dazed man didn't object at all. He washed his hands and wanted to return again to the bottle. But the Baal Shem Tov shliach spoke to him again and said, "Well, listen, you know, you can't just drink on an empty stomach. Eat a piece of bread. Drinking without eating is not good for you. Look at yourself." At his request, at the shliach's request, the drunk mumbled the words of Hamoitzi, the blessing over the bread, took a bite from the whole challah, as well as from the slice that was offered to him from the emissary of the Baal Shem Tov. And as he began to eat the food that came from the Baal Shem Tov's table and from the Hamoitzi of the Baal Shem Tov, the sanctity that clung to the shirayim, the remnants of the tzaddik's meal, permeated the Rav's being, and he came back to himself. The forces of klip of impurity released their clutch on him, and all of a sudden he looks at himself and says in anguish, "What have I done? Was I really ready to part with Judaism and God, my life?" And he couldn't come to himself from his distress. And he said, "Nothing can help me except I gotta go back to my Rebbe, the Baal Shem Tov. He can explain this strange phenomenon, this desire that I had. I can't make heads or tails about it, and I don't even know how to begin to atone for such a thing. He's the only one that can guide me to Tshuva, to tell me as well where I've gone wrong with such a horrible thing that was decreed upon me. But how can I get to the Baal Shem Tov? The Baal Shem is so far away. I'm in Lithuania now. The Baal Shem Tov is a Mezhebet. How can I possibly reach him? Which way can I possibly get to the Baal Shem Tov when I need him most? Shliach saw that the Rav's tshuva, that the Rav's regret, came from the very depths of his heart. And he said to him, "My friend, my fellow disciple of the Baal Shem Tov, for your own sake, listen to me. Let's get out of here and go to Temeshevish. And Be'ezras Hashem, with God's help, if I'm not mistaken, we'll get there quite shortly." And the Talmud emissary was so assured of the tzidkis, of the holiness of the Baal Shem Tov, and after all the kvitzes haderech and the wonders that happened so far, he was certain that as God was already helping the Rav, that he said to the Rav, "Hold on to my belt, and we will leave this place." The shliach, the leader, and the Rav, who was following him, holding his girdle, stepped out into the darkness of the night, and they began going. They saw nothing whatever around them, until, after a very, very short while, the vast distance between this Lithuanian town in Mezhebish, having sped wondrously under their feet, the back kvitzes haderech, they found themselves in Mezhebish. They opened the door, and at the sight of the Baal Shem Tov and the Chassidim, still seated around the table at their Mlava Malka, the Rav fell into a deep swoon. He fainted. When he came to, he wept the bitter, humble tears of the true Baal Tshuva, who was truly regretting his past deeds. The Baal Shem Tov explained to him what he had done wrong, taught him how to atone for his past, and made sure that such a thing would never transpire again. And that disciple, that Talmud of the Baal Shem Tov, remained all his life a true tzaddik and a true Baal Tshuva, a true holy man and a true penitent.